and the display showed the time frame estimate. Within 1 year. McGee whistled to himself. Accuracy? The numbers said plus or minus 12 months. McGee blinked at the numbers. That means it could happen any day now, he said to himself. Shaking his head, he added, I wouldn't want to be in New Orleans when Poseidon comes calling. Hope somebody's put out a warning to them. As they stepped out of the Eiffel Tower elevator into the driving gray rain, Jane popped her umbrella open. The wind nearly pulled it out of her hands. Dan reached for it and helped her steady it.
Where are you staying? She asked.
It's better if you don't know.
In Paris?
For the time being. She looked out across the rain-swept park.
I'll have to get a cab.
You'll never get one around here. I'll walk with you to the Hilton.
Are you sure that's a good idea?
As long as you have the umbrella, yes. The only other people out on the streets seemed to be a few Japanese tourists, looking wet and bedraggled and miserably unhappy. Jane, can you set up a meeting with Nobu for me?
Nobuhiko Yamagata?
Right. We had a kind of stupid argument the last time we were together, at his father's freezing. He got pretty sore at me, and...
He's not angry anymore. I think he'd like to see you.
Good, said Dan. We could use his help.
We certainly could.
They parted at the Hilton, Jane waiting in the lobby while the doorman phoned for a taxi, Dan striding off through the rain toward the apartment he had taken, hat pulled low and shoulders hunched against the rain. They did not kiss goodbye. Not at the hotel. Too many people might have seen them. I've got to protect her, too, Dan thought, squinting into the chill rain. She may have a GEC bodyguard, but I'll bet Gaetano's put himself in charge of security for the whole board. That'd be just their style of operation. Still, he grinned his widest grin as he walked splashing through the puddles on the sidewalks. She loves me. She really loves me. He wished he could sing and dance through the storm like that what's-his-name in that old video. He wished he could feel like a kid again, so blitzed by the thought that Jane loved him that nothing else mattered. But he knew better. He had the world on his shoulders. Now Jane's safety was an added problem. Big George and Tamara were waiting for him at the apartment. The four of us against the world, with Malik and Gaetano and the whole double-damned international crime syndicate against us. His grin vanished. I forgot to tell Jane about Tamara. Better remember to do it next time we meet. Got to make certain she doesn't get the wrong idea about the kid. That could screw up everything. 33. Once on Earth, Dan had tapped into one of the funds he had established in Liechtenstein, at the same bank into which he had deposited the money that he, Big George, and Pops Tucker had made on the moon. The lunar account was a pittance compared to that of Mason Dixon, Dan's alias. Roger Wilcox had disappeared. Mason Dixon had sprung to life out of the computer files of the International Bank of Liechtenstein, a charming miniature nation nestled in the Alps between Switzerland and Austria, where sleekly smiling bankers spoke in whispers and accepted deposits with few questions and low taxes. Like stoutly independent Switzerland, Liechtenstein had not formally joined the Global Economic Council. The only other nation on Earth that had similarly remained aloof was Afghanistan. Big George had accompanied Dan and Tamara to Earth. Pops Tucker remained on the moon, too physically debilitated to face full terrestrial gravity without a long and rigorous course of rehabilitation, which he adamantly refused even to consider. Besides, the wizened old man had argued, patting his laptop computer, I can keep an eye on your Williams woman for you. Dan had reluctantly agreed. Big George told him,
He's living the way he wants to. Fucking old kook's been an outlaw for so long he wouldn't know how to behave in normal society.
Dan nodded, but remembered Tucker's bitter anger at being unable to see his grandchildren. Which one is the real Pops Tucker? Dan asked himself. The nasty old man who won't stir himself to get back into shape, or the sad old guy who's never seen his grandchildren. But he put those thoughts behind him as he drove a rented car through a slashing rainstorm that was flooding the streets of Geneva. Every time I see Jane, it seems to be raining, he said to himself. The car radio was babbling about the unusual warm spell, the unseasonably heavy storm, and the rising level of the lake. The water was hubcaps deep in several places. The police had cordoned off several streets altogether. Wait till the glaciers start melting down, Dan thought grimly. They'll have to borrow gondolas from Venice, if there's anything left of Venice. The Bank of Geneva was hushed and imposing. Marble floors, vaulted ribbed ceiling, the smell of heavy money oozing out of the walls. The guard at the security desk was expecting Mason Dixon. Dan was escorted to a private conference room on an upper floor. Dan opened the door as the guard stood a respectful distance away. Jane was already there, her back to the door, staring out at the merciless rain. Nobo sat beside her looking glum. They both turned at the click of the door's closing. Jane's smile warmed the room. Nobo jumped to his feet, a slightly sheepish expression on his lean face. He came to Dan with his hand extended.
"It's good to see you again."
Dan grabbed his hand. "You too, Nobo. I'm sorry about the blow-up the last time we talked."
"It was my fault."
"Mine, just as much. I could have been more flexible."
"So could I."
Jane had swiveled her chair around to face the round table that dominated the small room.
"Don't start another argument apologizing about the old one," she said.
Nobo laughed, and Dan clapped him on the back, and the argument was forgotten. Almost. Dan could not help thinking that the whole issue was moot now. He couldn't adjust Astro's helium-3 output even if he wanted to. He no longer had control over the company. As soon as the two men had seated themselves, one on either side of Jane, Nobuhiko said,
"Dan, I want you to come back to my family home with me. You'll be safe in Kyoto."
Dan shook his head. "Thanks for the offer, but I'm still a wanted man, a fugitive from the GEC's brand of justice. You don't want to put yourself in jeopardy over me."
"You are my friend, and you are in danger," Nobo said. "I can protect you until Jane straightens out your legal difficulties."
"You don't understand, Nobo. My legal difficulties don't amount to a thimbleful of buckyballs compared to this greenhouse crisis."
"That's in the hands of the GEC," said Jane.
"Which means it's in the hands of the double-damned mafia and their associates around the world."
"If you fear for Jane's safety, I have a very discreet security team guarding her day and night."
"You do?"
Jane yelped. Nobo made a small nod.
"Ever since you spoke to me about your fears and Mr. Robertson's murder."
"Look," Dan said, "I've got enough data from Kate Williams to blow Gaetano out of the water, but I don't know who to give it to."
"The GEC has tied up most of the world's media, Dan," said Jane. "I've checked. Most of the member nations have imposed their official censorship laws. In the States, the major media have privately agreed to go along with the GEC's blackout on the greenhouse crisis, at least for now."
"Will they take the material I've got about the mafia infiltrating Astro, and their plans for all the major industries?"
"From a criminal? A man wanted for kidnapping, terrorism, drug dealing, smuggling, and grand larceny?"
Dan grinned at her. "Lord, that sounds damned impressive, doesn't it?"
"It's not funny, Dan."
"There are always outlets for hot news," Dan said. "The TV tabloids, the smaller news outfits."
"Then it won't be news, it will be gossip. Put your mafia story alongside stories about three-headed babies being born on Mars, and what have you got? No one will pay any attention."
"Yeah," Dan admitted grudgingly. "Nobody except the hitmen." Nobo suggested,
"You could give Dan's information to the media, Jane. You are a very prestigious person. Your integrity is unquestioned."
She gave a little shrug of her shoulders.
"The first thing they would ask would be where I got the information, what's my source. That would lead right back to Dan."
"How about an anonymous leak in the Astro office?"
"And who would that be?"
"A beautiful half-Ethiopian young woman who'd be a knockout on video." Jane's eyes narrowed. Nobuhiko asked,
"Wouldn't that expose her to danger?"
"They've already tried to kill her."
"Where is she? At Alphonsus?"
"I've brought her here. She's staying with me."
"A beautiful young woman," Jane said thinly.
Dan raised both hands over his head. "There is nothing going on between us. I'm just trying to protect her." Jane looked totally dubious. "Honest," said Dan, trying to look sincere.
"If she is in such danger," Nobo said, "then she must come with you to Kyoto."
"She should," Dan agreed. "But I'm not going with you, Nobo." Nobuhiko shot him a questioning look. I'm going to be